Jupiter Broadcasting presents this program in stereo.
This episode brought to you in part by GoDaddy.com.
This week on the Linux Action Show, we review Arch Linux and tell you why this 8-year-old Linux distribution is still the fresh maker. Then we cover Ubuntu's plans to switch to Unity, huge news for Compiz, and the GNOME project's mega cash infusion. Plus so much more, all this week on the Linux Action Show! And welcome to Linux Action Show, Season 14, Episode 3. My name is Brian, that guy is Chris.
Hey there, Brian.
That was the fast, to the point,
that was
waste
succinct,
not,
sir.
Want not. That's what this episode is all about, waste not, want not. Because we're going to be doing an Arch review later on in the episode.
That's a waste not.
That is the whole thing with Arch.
Yeah.
But why is that the whole thing with Arch? Wait, I'll tell you later.
All right, I got a new Runs Linux for you this week. See, before we said American Airlines ran Linux. Well, one of the last fans out there in
Here's the problem, Chris. Yeah. I need to stop you for a minute. This is the problem with doing a show live.
Yeah.
I glance over to my right. Now, if you're just listening to the audio version, yeah, you don't know what's going on. You don't see me glancing to my right.
Sure, probably not.
But if you're watching the video,
you might see a glance.
Now, you might wonder, what's Brian glancing at? He glances to his right.
Yeah, what's he see?
Now, I have to have show notes here,
sure,
so things to remember to talk about.
Sure.
Nothing too big. Honestly, our show notes are literally like, remember to talk about things that run Linux,
yep,
things like that.
Yeah.
But then off to the right of that is the chat room.
Yeah.
Now, normally, I don't pay too much attention to the chat room while recording.
No, because it kind of
However,
distracting.
I glance over, and what do I see? Can you scroll up slightly there, Chris?
Sure.
But someone in the chat room literally just said, lollipop.
Lollipop.
All in caps. That's the only thing I saw, because it was all in caps. And so it threw me off. That's all I can think about now is lollipop.
Lollipop.
Some angry, large man.
Yeah, because he's yelling lollipop.
Lollipop.
It's all,
yeah,
it's all up
when,
in the
when
head
has
case.
Anyone ever yelled lollipop?
All right, Brian. So you remember
Other
me,
than on the Linux Action Show.
You remember me talking about American Airlines ran Linux? Well, one of the last viewers out there in the audience, he was on a flight, a Delta Airlines flight, and the entertainment system crashed. And when it rebooted, well, he saw a good old Linux boot screen. So that's kind of cool. So he busted out his camera phone and started taking video of it and sent it in to me. So I thought I'd play, because I like whenever we can feature a video version of Runs Linux.
Oh, that's awesome!
I wanted to play that.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that is just too rad.
So how you doing? It's Halloween week, and I guess
doing fantastic.
Today is Halloween.
You know what's great about that?
Spooky.
Nothing. I hate Halloween. I absolutely abhor Halloween as a holiday.
Yeah,
Halloween.
Yeah.
Halloween goes right below annual like prostate exam.
Sure,
day.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
I got into the spirit this year. I carved pumpkins with my son Dylan.
Oh no, that's adorable.
Yeah, yeah. We went out there and we picked out pumpkins at a local pumpkin farm.
Look at you guys.
Right.
Scroll down a little bit more.
Aren't we adorable?
Oh my
carving
gosh!
Pumpkins?
More pictures. More family pictures. Give me more.
No,
of those.
The audio people hate it.
No,
Brian.
They love
but,
that.
But I haven't carved pumpkins in years.
Oh, dude.
I haven't.
These
done
adorable
that.
Pictures up on your screen, and then you switched over.
I know. We don't need to say it, but we all know. We all know what we're thinking.
We all know. But here's the great thing about GoDaddy.com is you can go there. You can type in Linux when you check out in the coupon code slot, not in the domain name slot.
That's not where you do it.
Because Linux.com is taken, it turns out. Try to register that about once a day. Never works. One of these days, it's going to work, and I am going to laugh so hard because I am immediately going to put up something funny there. I don't know what it's going to be, but it's going to be funny.
Let's see if maybe Linux.com is available.
Maybe Linux?
Yeah.
Well, you
yes,
know-
it is! It feels like I just won something.
Dude, it's just $11.99 a year, plus you can save 10% when you check out if you type in Linux. And the great thing is, you know that old this was pointed out. So last week we were gone.
Yeah.
You were dying.
Yeah.
You're not anymore.
No, I'm better.
You look better.
Thanks.
I was out of town on a business trip.
Yep.
So obviously no Linux Action Show.
Right.
So we threw on a rerun.
Mm-hmm.
We did the old one where we were talking about how Asus came out with their Triple E campaign.
Yeah, they totally sack punched
they
the
came
Linux
up,
people.
Yeah, they were just jerks about it. They were like, how they're going to put Windows in all the netbooks. And they came up with this domain name. That's, what was it? It's Better with Linux?
It's
Better with Windows.
Some runs Better with Windows or some crap.
Better with Windows, something like that. If you go to our show notes for the last episode, I'm going to do it right now just so I can get this right in the show. You can find it. The great thing is the domain expired.
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what I do love? They registered with GoDaddy.com.
They sure as heck did. Here, hold on. I'm going to bring this up here.
So, you know, even there, what's funny is how fast that has just completely dropped off the face of the earth.
Oh, it doesn't show anywhere. It's in our chat room notes. If you go to the chat room, people are chatting about it. The colony. There's so many words.
So that was such a big deal back then.
It was huge, and now it's expired.
And now you could go over to GoDaddy.com with the code Linux and save 10% if you wanted to pick that domain up.
If you wanted to pick that domain up and put something awesome there.
And if you wanted to run your own PR destroying
just
campaign.
Just a little come up, just not really.
Yeah. Maybe it runs better with Windows.com and then host that over on GoDaddy and get 20% off. Use the code
in
Linux
a Linux 20. Shared hosting.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. Save 20% Linux 20. Yeah, anyway, that's awesome.
Now, this is why I'm a jerk. Before the show, I was going to be really cool, and I said to my wife, hey, after our GoDaddy spot, I want to call you using the new video calling application that I have as my Android.
Man, you're a jerk.
She said, yeah, no problem. I'll be waiting for your call right here with my phone. I'll just wait because I don't know when that's going to be. I'll just sit here waiting for you. Okay, thanks, sweetie.
Well, that's
really,
nice.
Right?
Yeah.
So what I did is I came out here in the studio and forgot my phone. So I can't call her. But I have used Tango video calls.
Yeah, but if you had your phone, it would totally work. We swear.
It would be so awesome. Yeah. And Tango video calls, it's available for the iPhone and for any Android phone. And it lets you make video calls over 3G. And they're a little
but they work.
Chunky. You know, the frame rate's not so good.
But they work.
They work. And over Wi-Fi, they work. And
They work. Nice.
I have an Evo 4G with the front-facing camera, and it lets you switch between the back and front camera.
Yep.
So I made a video call to my wife, who's on an iPhone 3GS. And it just on there, there's only one camera, so it just uses her back camera. But I was able to, in call, hit the little flip button and switch my cameras and then give her a tour of the room I was in, then hit
it
back
great.
And I'm talking again. Yeah, yeah. Kept the orientation good and all that kind of stuff. And since it's totally free and it can go over 3G or Wi-Fi, there's really no reason not to use it. You invite each other to the service over email, and then it...
Now, is there any way to call, like, a PC with that?
I don't think so. No.
See, that's what they need.
I know.
They need a PC client to go along with it, because, like, Skype is great. You know, do, like, video chat with Skype or Google Talk or all these different things. But half the time, they only work with, like, one platform or another. And Skype is great, but, like, the only way to do video chat with Skype is, like, on an N900.
Mm-hmm.
And
then you've got FaceTime for the Mac, but that's Mac only.
But that's
and
Mac
iPhone
only. Yeah.
I know.
So
and
that's
I don't,
no fun.
I don't get the sense that the Tango folks really have any interest in developing a PC application. It sounds like to me their primary focus is mobile, based on reading their site and kind of learning a bit about them. They really want
cool,
to be
though.
Like
the mobile video chat people.
Now, I've just got a secondary pick. You never know that I like to throw these out
secondary?
There. Yeah.
Holy moly.
And this one came up because, well, Skype on Android is horrible, and I needed to remove it. And then I realized, while I was cleaning house, why not remove a few other things? So I went out and got this program called Uninstaller, and, well, it does exactly that. But what's nice about it is some of the other uninstallers, like the one built into the Android operating system,
yeah.
This one lets you batch, uninstall, and search.
Oh, that's cool.
So if you've got a lot of programs like I do, you can search for it, but also you can just go through this and go tap, 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 tap.
Uninstall and let
uninstall.
It work.
Uninstall, yeah.
Just let it go.
Then you just walk away and you're good.
That's great.
Yeah, so that's two Android picks, and you can
and that
head
right
over
there
to
is set it and forget it.
Right?
Right there.
You can head over to the show notes and get links to those bad mamajamas.
Who came up with that saying?
Ronco guy? Oh, what was his
oh
name?
Yeah. Ron Popeil.
That was Popeil's last name?
Yeah.
How do you remember that?
Well, because he was Ronco.
Yeah, Ronco. Now that
yeah,
I remember.
I forgot it was the set it. It is the set it and forget it guy with the turkey dehydrators.
Yes, dude,
and
I wanted one of those Ronco rotisseries, man. Because
those
that thing,
were cool looking.
Dude, you could put a whole bird in that thing and then just set it and forget it.
Yeah, they repeated that so many times at like 1 in the morning when I couldn't sleep.
I know, and it's weird when you get into that state where you're like, you give up on TV and you're like, I'm just going to watch this. It's something to have on.
Hey, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Before we go any further,
okay.
I'm going to mention something that is mildly self-promotery, but I make no money off of.
Go for it.
Go to my stinking BBS and play Trade Wars.
Oh, that's what I wanted to mention.
Trade Wars is so much fun.
Yeah.
So I did this purely... I've mentioned this a few times. I got my old Triple E set up with running a BBS. I originally set up with like 8 lines, so people can telnet in. You have to telnet to bbs.lunduke.com or just go to lunduke.com, and there's like a little flash terminal that will auto-log you in if you want to.
So I've been jumping in, and yeah. Not a lot. I just started to get rolling on it, but it's so awesome.
Dude, it's just old school fun.
It's more awesome than I expected it to be, I guess. I don't know exactly what I was expecting, but I really, really liked it. So
it's fun, dude.
So House of Lunduke BBS over at lunduke.com. How cool is that?
Yeah, so now there's 20 lines. 20 lines running off of a single little tiny original Triple E, the one with like the Celeron 600 some megahertz processor, yeah. and the whopping 4 gig solid state disk in there. It's totally awesome.
Is that running on Ubuntu or what is it?
Dude, yes. So I'm going to go into exactly how it's running later on, because it's a pain in the butt how I've got this set
really?
Up. Yeah, I set it up the hardest possible way. It's stupid. Honestly,
you're doing it for fun, not to make it more work
no,
for
I
yourself.
I did, but you know what I mean. I wanted to try. You know, Linux Action Show.
Yeah,
I want to try running on Linux. So it's a DOS based BBS that I'm running with a Windows based Telnet wrapper.
Yeah.
Under Linux.
Yeah.
So
and
if
I,
you can
I didn't
use
think
your
about
noggin,
the fact that you would have to take Telnet and you have to map it to what would essentially
comports.
But yeah.
Yes, using fossil drivers and all the old crap.
Epic.
It's ridiculous. Honestly, if I was a smart man, what I'd do is I'd format it and I'd install like XP or something with just that on
it. Would
it
be easier, wouldn't
but that's
it?
Not my way.
No.
That's not how I roll.
No.
So I make it harder for myself. But the good thing, 20 lines uses like 10% of the CPU with all 20. I've seen it with over 10 lines, like 14 some lines filled up, people playing games.
I've jumped on there and I haven't really seen any slowness at all. You know, we should mention though, that
great.
Is the reason to tune in live over at jupiterbroadcasting.com/live, because people knew about this like, I guess, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
People have been on there for 2 weeks. Because we've been talking about it on the live stream between segments.
People hopped on it way before they were supposed to.
Yeah.
They hopped on it when like the menus were broken and the games didn't load.
People moved into your house before the walls were up.
That's good times.
Yeah. Hey, you know, also, I wanted to mention just as a follow-up, 2 weeks ago we mentioned that our server was sort of down on its side.
Oh,
we were
yeah.
having issues. So last
Brutal.
Middle of last week, we finished the migration over to a new server. And to celebrate, because it's kind of a party... we're working with Nearsource IT and Alan from Nearsource IT. He's often in our chat room. He's a member of our community, and he's already been running our Jupiter Colony server, our Minecraft server, and a few other things for us. And so to celebrate, we're going to seed from our new server an Archbox torrent of the VirtualBox Arch machine that I put
that
together
we use
today.
For the review.
Yeah. So I put it together, I think, a couple weeks ago, and then just kept it current. It's got KDE 4.5.1 in it and Enlightenment 17.
So if you want to just get kickstarted with Arch and toy around with a fully set up box, kind of a cool way to go.
So the link to that will be in the show notes, and that's sort of a celebration to break in the new server. Oh, all right, Brian, let's do the news.
What's new in the news this week?
All right, Brian, our top story on the news docket for this week. Ubuntu 11.04 will ship with Unity as its default desktop.
Did this blow your mind?
Yeah, a lot, actually.
I think it blew just about everybody's mind.
It blew my mind because our walkaway impression in our Ubuntu 10.10 review
was great but unnecessary.
Yeah. In fact, I think your exact quote was, it's got a lot of potential, it's very exciting, I didn't use it after 10 minutes.
Yeah. It's nice. It looks nice. It works fine. I just didn't need it, so I didn't use it. And so Mark Shuttleworth announced this at Ubuntu Development Summit.
The UDS is just happening, so the news docket will be a little Ubuntu heavy this week.
Yeah, so it's happening. But don't worry. We got an Arch review coming. You're going to dig it, so sit tight.
He says, Mark Shuttleworth at the Ubuntu Developers Conference says this will be the most significant change for Ubuntu ever and one of their most challenging and risky steps.
I believe it.
Yeah.
It is a pretty big change. I mean,
it's for 11.04, too. That's just right around the corner.
It's big. Well, assuming it's ready. So they're assuming it will hit in 11.04. The From I believe it was Shuttleworth that said something along the lines of, it looks like it's on track, you know, we're making great progress, right. Everyone's on it, and they're going to go for 1104. However, it might not hit 1104.
Now,
if it doesn't, we'll see it in 1110.
Yeah.
But it's coming, and it's happening, soon.
I guess the main emphasis here is they are just, you know, they're dissatisfied with the direction that Gnome is taking.
They don't want Gnome Shell.
And they feel that the direction that they have here might be a better one for them. And I guess one of the problems is that they just simply don't feel that the direction that Gnome is going in with the utilization of Mutter is going to yield enough performance. So their intention is to retool Unity to use Compiz.
Awesome.
Yeah. Which... I closely just personally follow the Compiz development blog. And if you followed that, you've seen it's been going through some resource problems. It's sort of falling down to one person doing the work, one good dude. And honestly, I think he was getting to a point, just if you read between the lines on his blog, he was getting to the point where he was about to burn out. And I think Compiz potentially had a questionable future.
Yeah, yeah, but now this gives Compiz an extra infusion of interest.
He made a blog post, and I'll try to find it for the show notes. And in this blog post, he said, this is huge for me. He says, I've talked to Canonical. I knew this announcement was coming. They've committed to allocating resources to this. I mean, that's huge. That's really exciting. So it's a great thing for Compiz. I'm nervous for Ubuntu, but I'm totally willing to give it a shot.
I think it's exciting. I like to see different distros actually doing something different because we talk so much. I mean,
yeah, this will be a big differentiator.
Like Ubuntu and Fedora and OpenSUSE, well, they all defaultly ship with GNOME, and we load it up with a fairly standard GNOME desktop with minor variations. Yeah. Like Ubuntu recently added in like the Me menu stuff and all these other things. That was pretty cool. You know,
yeah,
it was
I agree.
It was nice variations, but it was still GNOME 2. Dot blah blah blah.
Here's
dot,
my
blah,
concern
and it
with
was
it.
Just not that exciting.
My concern with it is Unity gets rid of, if I'm understanding correctly, the traditional GNOME applet system, you know, where you can put like the system monitor applet up there, and you can put the little drawer applet and the terminal services applet, all of which I use all of these.
It's still there right now.
It's but in Unity, I think you still have the GNOME bar.
You still have the GNOME bar.
See,
so
I don't know if in their new full Unity, I don't know if you will have that.
You'll still have some.
Okay.
You'll still have that. You'll still have the place for all those.
I know they have their new.
They
have their application indicator thing. That's sort of like a new invention of that.
Yep.
And I don't know if it's a total replacement or what. And if it's a total replacement, I mean, it's not gonna make or break a decision for me over applets. But I hate it when I have to give something like that for, I don't know.
No, see, I'm not too worried about it. I figure they've got a little bit of time to work out the kinks. Right now, Unity is meant for netbooks running an app full screen,
right?
And you know, it's really. They're retooling it. They've already talked about how they're going to be retooling the user experience for dealing with multiple windowed applications and having multiple windows up for various applications.
They've got kind of like a dock-type solution thing going, too.
Yeah, honestly, you know, I know a lot of people who have desktops that look kind of like this right now with a GNOME bar that's highly customized and maybe running like Docky or something like that to put a nice little dock in place. And honestly, this doesn't strike me as all that different.
Yeah.
But I like what they're doing. It's different than stock GNOME. It's definitely different than GNOME Shell.
Yeah.
And that's the big deal is they're saying GNOME Shell is not the future of GNOME.
And I think that's interesting. The interesting takeaway.
But
there's a rift
Unity
being built here.
Unity sits on top of GNOME and on top of GTK. I mean, they're still saying those are the great projects. They just don't like GNOME Shell,
which I kind of agree with. Do you think there's a risk here that people are going to get an attitude? I mean, come on. Let's be honest. Attitudes and egos are in excessive supply in the open source community.
Yep.
And it's possible that they could see this action that Ubuntu's taking or Canonical's taking where you say, this project just isn't working with us. We're going to go off on our own direction. Now, does that set a tone for when they're talking to other projects that aren't going the direction they want, and now people are going to just automatically assume, well, if we don't do it, Ubuntu's going to bail, screw them?
You know what? No, because I think that tone already exists in the underlying architecture. Because you already see distros saying, I don't like the way you package those files. I'm going to package it slightly differently. I mean, come on.
That's a good point.
Package formats are all a tar file with your binaries in them or your source code in them with like a tiny little text file that says what you got.
Word.
That's what all of them are. I mean, there's minor variations, very, very minor. I mean, RPM and Debian formats are basically the same damn thing.
Just different rules.
however, they work a little differently because of the implementation, because someone gets a stick up their butt and doesn't want to use the same thing that Ted down the street is using.
Yeah.
However, in user space land,
yeah,
we tend to be fairly cohesive. We tend to run stock GNOME. We tend to run stock KDE, all with minor tweaks, and run with Firefox 3. Whatever, yeah, and OpenOffice this version, yeah, and it's all the same. So from a user's perspective, like, it's hard
because it's the same application.
You sit down and the OS constantly looks the same.
Yeah.
It never differentiates from each other, yeah, until you are really nerdy and dive way down,
right,
deep.
Now when you're in the Etsy directory, you see the difference.
Now, right.
But when you're in exactly, GNOME, you're in GNOME.
But when you're GNOME, you're in GNOME. And now, yeah, if they come out and say, okay, you know what?
Like,
we're
that
Unity here. And Fedora, maybe Fedora stays with GNOME and GNOME Shell. And then OpenSUSE goes off in its own direction. I love that, because then they're so obviously different.
And you got to figure,
they have a different mentality and a different goal.
You've got Zubuntu now. You've got Kubuntu. You've got Edubuntu.
Yep.
You know? There's going to be a Gubuntu or whatever. Yeah, that's gonna still. There's still gonna be that mainline GNOME desktop.
Yeah, and honestly, and Kubuntu is not gonna go Unity.
No.
Why would they?
Yeah.
They've got a beautiful KDE 4 desktop.
Yeah.
There's no reason.
All right, I've got a feel good story. You want to talk about it?
I would love it.
Let's stop talking about Ubuntu for a second here, and let's talk about GNOME. GNOME has received $15,000 to go towards improving the accessibility features of GNOME for the blind and people that have a hard time seeing the screen. Now, what's of note of this is Mozilla, who's already donated earlier this year, has stepped up with $10,000 worth of this $15,000 grant.
Awesome.
Yeah, the F123 Maes Deferencias, they're a French company. They also kicked in $5,000.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so this is the second contribution, a big contribution from Mozilla in the same year, and now the GNOME Foundation has $15K to throw around to improve
that's great.
Some of that stuff. And,
I love that.
Yeah.
That's dandy delicious. Way to go, guys.
This is the timing on this is kind of interest to me, Brian. I'll tell you this. I was just talking with the...
Is your eyesight going?
No.
Is that why your eyes have been red all the time?
No, not quite. There is a library. My local town library has a computer lab of 20 computers, right?
Okay.
And
I'm following you so far.
Pretty easy.
It's tricky, but
here's the problem.
Okay.
And I'm not exaggerating. These computers are 11 years old. Okay, now that's not that bad. It's like they're Pentium 3s. They're 512 megs of RAM because they've been upgraded from the 256 they had. You know, they got like 4 megs of RAM.
So what you're saying is they're slightly more powerful than my Triple E netbook running my 20-line BBS at lunduke.com.
They don't have the money to replace them, but they also just don't want to bring them to Windows 7, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And we've been looking at I stopped in there because I have a friend that works there. We stopped in there and said, yeah, you know, we could take one of your computers, make it a Linux terminal server, add more memory to it, and then net boot the rest.
That'd be cool.
And we could pull the hard drives, pull all this stuff. And the one problem we run into is they do have certain accessibility issues they have to factor in for. And GNOME is a problem in that regard. So this kind of work is definitely needed because it would help things like this Linux terminal server project that I was kind of talking
about. That'd be
great. Move along a little, little more grease on that project.
I mean, $15,000. I mean, come on, let's be honest. Doesn't go a whole hell of a long way.
No, but you know, if you hire
one great dev for 2 months, but
it's
one
probably
great
a project
dev
budget
working
for
2 months, that's awesome.
Yeah,
I mean, that's only 2 months of work. But hey, if that results in 10 new bug fixes and one small feature, that helps.
I agree, sir.
So good on you, Mozilla. And what was the company's name?
It was some French.
Ms. Poisson.
Yeah.
I don't know how to say her name, but way to go.
And then the great thing about I've
never given $10,000 to the GNOME project.
And the great thing about that is those accessibility improvements will be applied upstream and then trickle down to all distributions. Well, except for Ubuntu now. But all distributions that use GNOME will get those accessibility improvements.
Well, Ubuntu's still going to be using GNOME. They're just...
I'm just poking a little fun, Brian. I'm just jabbing the Ubuntu guys a little bit.
I don't know that at all.
I'm sorry, Brian.
You just finish your news.
I got one last Ubuntu story.
I would like to do an Arch review.
And then we'll talk about Arch for the rest of the episode.
Okay.
Dude, this story's in here for you and me only, I think.
Oh, yeah, I like this one.
Banshee is returning as the default media player in Ubuntu 11.04. And I'm a happy boy.
You mean debuting as the default media player?
Oh, was it Rhythmbox?
Rhythmbox.
Forever?
Currently.
I guess I've always just installed Banshee then.
Yeah, it's always been Rhythmbox.
I thought it was Banshee for a little while.
Nope.
Well, that's always one of the things that's bugged me about.
They've talked about it becoming Banshee for 2 years
From this
now.
Point forward, this is always one of the things that's bugged me about Ubuntu, which will now be resolved.
That would be great, wouldn't it?
I honestly never even start Rhythmbox anymore.
I tried it recently. Like, I tried to give it a shot because it was installed and their little status icon looks good.
Yep.
For a while there, the Banshee status icon was like a different funky color without a proper mask, so it looked terrible in the standard Ubuntu bar. So Rhythmbox, I'm like, it looks good, so I'm trying it out.
Yeah.
I still don't like it. I still installed and use Rhythmbox as I burp Dr. Pepper into the microphone.
I launched Rhythmbox in the 10.10 review to check out the store integration. And you know what? Rhythmbox seems like it'd be fine. But
it's not bad.
I honestly didn't really
try
it
wrong
because
with it.
I just wanted to see how their implementation of it. And then I just immediately go to Banshee.
I love Banshee is the thing. Yeah. It's not that Rhythmbox is bad. It's that I like Banshee.
No, Banshee's fantastic.
Here's the thing, though. I'm going to believe this when I see it. Because
we've heard
so
this before.
It was supposed to be a year ago.
It was supposed to be not in the release before this 9.10. One, but the last two.
9.10 was supposed to be it,
and 9.04.
And 9.04.
Yeah,
and then it was this release was supposed to have Banshee of Ubuntu.
But then they switched to Rhythmbox.
I mean, it's no big deal. I can just rip it out, and hell, I don't even need to rip it out. I mean, if your hard drive has more than 200K free, I mean, it's not like it's a huge app.
I know.
Who cares?
I'm just excited. It's a little win, Brian.
It's not like we're Fedora here where we're going to like go around going, oh gosh, you know, this app takes up 5K. We have a DVD release. We might not be able to fit on DVD, so we better remove all of Mono.
Yeah, I like the idea that they have to remove Mono for disk space because you're releasing a 4GB Linux distribution and really... You're worried about those couple extra megs because otherwise those people on dial-up might not be able to get it.
By the way, if you haven't been keeping count, this week is Fedora Hate Week. Here's why I figured that out. I wasn't sure if the last episode was Fedora Hate episode or not.
Right.
But we were off last week.
Yeah.
So either way, the every other week timing cycle, in order to hate Fedora, is this week. which means that next week, Fedora, good on ya. Now... If you are keeping track.
Wait, but doesn't on...
Hold on. That means our current schedule is next week, and I'm just going to go through this now so everyone has this straight.
Yeah.
Next week, we're doing a gaming episode.
Right.
We're going to talk about some games, some of our favorite games for Linux.
Yeah.
What are we doing the week after that?
Oh, it's the new Fedora 14 review.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm. So if we hate on Fedora every other week...
Uh-oh.
Math time.
Maybe we should double up on the Fedora hate for 2 weeks in a row. That way it's an extra Fedora love episode.
Yeah, you do what you want. I'm a purist. I stick to math.
All right, Brian. You're such a scientist. You know that? You're such a scientist.
I'm a scientist when it comes to my Fedora hating.
All right. Well, congrats to the Banshee project. I'm sure that's going to be a good uptick for them, too. You know? That's a good
that's great.
Front-facing mono project that's going to get a lot of default installs now.
I love Banshee. The team has done a great job on it.
There's still some to-dos on the Banshee project in order for Ubuntu. You know, there is a certain... level of functionality. They have to get better notification integration. They have to get better applet integration.
No, there's work.
They're going to get it done, though.
There's work to do, but hey, when is there not work to do?
Right?
That's
Speaking
what
of which,
saying.
We've got some work to do, Brian. So that's all the news for this week.
All right, we're going to do something a little different this week. We are going to review a releaseless Linux distro.
Oh.
A Linux distro that has no release.
Mm.
Now, technically, we're talking about Arch here.
Yeah.
This is Arch Linux.
Yep.
Technically, you can go to Arch Linux's website.
Yep.
You can look up, Chris will bring that up so you guys can even see it, that it really exists.
It does.
And you can download a release of Arch Linux. But what it really is they take it at a moment. They basically look around. They say, hey,
it's a good time
that's pretty good right now.
It's a pretty good snapshot.
Pretty good right now. So they pull everything together and they stick it up there and they're like, you know what?
We're going to call that a release.
Stake in the ground. Yeah. That's a release.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter. It does not matter when you grab Arch Linux because the idea is that you're always going to be up to date.
It's kind of like a Debian testing sort of situation.
Yeah. You're constantly rolling.
Although some people have said it's maybe a little more stable than Debian testing. It's funny though because I would say one of the biggest things that brings definition to Linux distributions is their release and the release cycle. You know, Ubuntu 10.10, Ubuntu 11.04, Fedora 14. But what I still find interesting is when I step back and look at all the distributions, even though Arch doesn't have that big monumental thing, it still seems to be a more well-defined distribution.
In a lot of ways. They're very clear about what makes Arch important.
Right.
So let's take a step back.
All right.
This is a very difficult one to review because you can't review look and feel. Mm-mm. It doesn't matter. Mm-mm. There is no look and feel.
There is no set look and feel.
So here's the thing. The idea is that it's simple. And they define simple in developer terms. They do not define simple in easy to use terms. The idea is that it is exactly what you need and no more.
Right. It's very minimal.
So when you install Arch, the first time you install Arch, you get nothing. You get jack squat. Yeah. You load it up and you're like, seriously? Well, for one, the install is very, very fast.
Yes.
So,
and it's a lot. It's a lot. You know, I should say the install was a lot more harmless, a lot less. It was not as hard as I was expecting.
No, it was fairly simple.
I had sort of built up a lot of anxiety around the Arch install process. And in fact, that's why I thought, you know, we should release that VirtualBox image as a downloadable thing. Because if you've been pent up around just getting past the install phase, well, now download this VirtualBox image and you'll get past it. But when I went through it,
it's not that bad.
It wasn't that bad.
Now, I'm trying to load up the beginner's guide here because this is really how you get started.
So, yeah, absolutely.
So Arch is more than a piece of software. Arch is a document. I mean, really, when you think about it, because you get a very basic install. You don't get Wi-Fi drivers. You're going to get, you know, no real video acceleration of any kind.
Right.
All you're going to get.
It's an NCurses-based installer.
Yes.
And you just kind of go through their automated guides.
Yes.
And if you can go off the beaten path if you want to, but, you know, if you follow the documentation, you kind of need to go through. I'm replaying. I shot my Arch install on the live stream, and if you're watching the video version right now, I'm essentially fast-forwarding through what is their installer. And it's FreeBSD-like almost.
It's very FreeBSD-like.
But also very functional. I mean, I really had
no... It worked fine.
I had no... You know what? Actually, using Arch kind of brought me to the realization that... I've been pushed away from the command line, and I really have no desire to be pushed away from the command line.
Me like, either.
I've been being told
that
for a long time
it's
that
too hard,
you got to get the installer
it, yeah.
easy. You want a live installer. It's got to be click, click, click. Three clicks is the goal, yep. You know? And you know what, actually? Turns out, there was really no problem with this.
None.
And what I liked about it is I went and did their net install option.
Oh, did you?
And their net install option, you just download just enough, and...
Just bootstraps it, and then
it boots into a Linux shell, and then you literally have to log in and go start the installer. You have to run the what it gives you right there in the login, you know, welcome message.
Yeah,
the message of the day. It says that here, run the installer. But once you start it up, it goes out and it actually downloads the net version, gets the latest packages. So you're not even using stuff that was old with their release CD. This is just fresh.
It's just
off
the latest and greatest,
and lays it right down on the hard drive,
which is fantastic. So you're always getting the latest and greatest. You're never behind. You want the latest release of any, you know, user space apps, any of your drivers, everything. You got the latest. You are cutting edge with Arch, no matter what you do, unless you just don't update, which is fine. You can choose to do that. Once you get it stable, you can just say, you know what? I'm done right here.
There was a point during the install where I was a little surprised that I thought maybe this... You go into the installer and to really do a full Arch install, you know, you're actually supposed to edit a couple of the standard Etsy config files that you normally never would touch, like your resolve.conf and your... you can go in and maybe double-check your FS
when
tab.
Was the last time you ever touched your resolve.conf?
I know.
To modify like your DNS stuff.
It's been a while, dude. Or the RC.conf.
I got to be honest with you. I kind of forgot about it.
Yeah.
Like, I got in there and I'm like, I know... Like, it's on my servers, but for some reason I just didn't click that my home machines have that too.
Yeah.
And it blew my mind.
I would say, because of that aspect of it, this is an incredible learning tool. I mean, if you really, really want to know what makes Linux do the things that it can do, and really... You get such a simpler as you work with distributions like Arch, or I'm more reflecting on my Gentoo experience too, you realize it's so much simpler than you thought it was.
So much simpler.
And then you start to realize some of the elegance and beauty of Linux itself, and some of the original reasons you switched from something like Windows, where it's more like this opaque box that has this weird registry where everything's interconnected.
Totally.
And it's like, oh yeah, this is what's great about Linux. And this is why the command line's okay. And this is why I don't mind having to see these weird text things scroll past my screen. Because it's actually telling me what I need to know.
Yeah.
It's actually giving me the output that tells me exactly what the computer's doing. And it's not just some weird nebulous progress bar.
Yeah.
And I really dug that about it. Now, the problem was I did kind of feel like I still was probably fighting a few things I didn't need to quite fight. Like, for example, the Pac-Man file, the Pac-Man package manager is really sweet and really nice. And
yeah, it works great.
But at the same time, when I type in Pac-Man and I tell it to install KDE4, it didn't really do the full job. You know what I mean? It went out and got KDE4, but I needed to still get some X stuff, and I still had to get X configured to start automatically and all that stuff. And at one point, I realized that on Ubuntu, I sort of play this game when I install software or any distribution where I don't exactly know what the end result of that installation is going to be. Whereas with Arch, I always know what it's going to be because it's going to be the absolute least thing it can ever be.
Right.
It's going to be the
Which
least
is
setup.
Kind of nice.
It is. There is something kind of refreshing to it because I figure, you know, for example, I just installed Ntop yesterday on Ubuntu. I don't know if at the end of that apt-get install Ntop, if it's going to be automatically a starting daemon or if I'm going to have to go modify config files.
No, you kind of got to look into that, see what happens.
I install it, I do a PS, see if it's running, you know, whatever.
And a lot of times I'll actually pop open the deb file, and, you know, open up the archive and see what it did, just so I can know what happened. But with Arch,
you know all the way through, and you know that that service isn't going to start. And you
until
know,
you do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and until you edit your init file and make that thing start when you boot your computer. That blew my mind. The first time I put on KDE, install KDE.
Yeah.
It's there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and I started KDE just manually. Yeah. I just started it. I'm like, awesome. It's working. I'm like, dude, this works so great. I restarted my machine. Command prompt.
Yeah.
I'm like, what?
Yep, you got to go hit the rc.conf, dude.
I'm like, I was looking around. I was looking behind me. I'm like, where'd I put KDE?
Yeah.
I know I put it here. And then I started it. And I started.
Yep.
And then it dawned on me. Oh. Yeah. Arch.
Yeah.
That was the moment for me when it sunk in that you have to do everything yourself, which is nice
for us. It is nice, kind of, in a way.
If you're a nerd, this is great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is. I mean, I would never, ever, ever give this to someone who was not a nerd.
No, exactly.
If you gave this to them, they would immediately tell you that Linux was the worst thing ever invented.
This is definitely not a noob distro, but because you know that by just how it functions going into it, that's what I was saying. It's almost better to find than, like, say something like Fedora or OpenSUSE, where I think those are power user distros that also want some friendliness, but sometimes I can't tell if they're developer distros. I can't tell
they're
if they're server distros.
Schizophrenic.
But I know that Arch is a power user.
That's it.
And they're because of
devs
that.
Devs and power users.
I tried to kind of get the pulse of the community. Now, I didn't use this for as long as you did. I only used it for about 2 weeks or so, but I kind of tried to wiggle my way into the communities and stuff like that. And I've got some great community links in the show notes if you're going to get started with Arch. These are some great resources. But there is a little of that get out of here, RTFM, and
dude,
come back.
No. But there's a ton of that.
Like, but if you for a ask reason, the question, their manual is the
all
best
right, here's,
distro.
Here's what we're scrolling through on this page. This is the Getting Started manual.
You're going so fast, it could just be a blur for them.
But literally, I'm still scrolling. I'm not like, there we go. I made it to the end. It is hugely, like, I'm going to page up once. Here, bump, bump, bump. Can you see the scroll bar? No, you can't really see it.
But yeah,
it's like it's like 100 some pages.
Yep.
That's the Getting Started. Now, look, compare that to, you know, Fedora or OpenSUSE or Ubuntu. The Getting Started is super easy, or Debian or any of them. So it's
that's what made me so scared. But okay, I went through that once.
It is intimidating.
I went through it once. The second time I installed Arch, I didn't need to go through it.
You didn't need it. No. That's how I was too. Yeah. I put one machine on with KDE, and I'm like, you know what? I need a GNOME box. I never checked this out. Well, no, that's not true. When I got to the point of is there anything, I checked it to make sure I wasn't missing something.
Sure.
So I installed the GNOME packages, made sure it launched on boot, and then I'm like, well, wait a minute. Am I missing something? This is Arch. I've never done Linux from scratch.
I abused the live chat room for
like the 1990s.
I had the advantages the second time I did it. I did it live.
Did you really?
Both live, but the second time I did it with the chat room up. And I was like, okay, I think I got everything, but did I miss anything? But what was cool is they pointed me to some of them are longtime Arch users.
Yeah.
And I've heard from a few different. One guy contacted me. He said he's been using Arch for 2 years now. He absolutely loves it. And he pointed me to. No, it was Rika in the chat room that pointed me to something called.
AUR?
Pac-Man pill or something like that in combination with AUR.
Yep.
Which is
we should say the Arch user repository. So
I guess we should talk a little bit about Pac-Man.
Let's talk about Pac-Man. So Pac-Man is
Power Pill. That's what it was. They were telling me about Power Pill, and so I got a little more my second time around. I was just going to mention this is in the VirtualBox image, and if you use Power Pill to install software, oh my god, dude, so freaking fast. KDE4 in like minutes, just like a couple of minutes. It does simultaneous package downloads and simultaneous package installs. It like blasts the bits on your hard drive is crazy. So PowerPill, that's already installed in the VirtualBox image. Anyways, let's talk about Pac-Man.
So Pac-Man's great, but my general takeaway on Pac-Man, it's a package management tool. It's not really much different than, you know, apt or yum or
totally
anything
agree.
Else. It's the same basic thing. And just like we were saying earlier on in the show, all those different package formats, they're really not that different. They're fine. And Pac-Man worked fine. I did not encounter problems with it.
Yeah, no, I didn't have an issue
fine.
With it. You sync it to the repo list. You can. There's a bunch of different mirrors you can choose from, and they have tools to help you pick the fastest
one. I felt like, and this is probably part of the ideology, I felt like it didn't do as good a job of, like, you know, dependency checking and that sort of thing as, like, app does. But then again, this is Arch. You know, you should know if you're installing KDE, you should know what you're installing.
And watch the
and
output.
What it depends on.
Watch the installer output. When I installed it, I didn't have a good mirror set my first time through. And so I actually got a few. It didn't wasn't able to download a few packages. And if I hadn't been watching the screen. So the first few times you go through it, you got to really watch to make sure you're getting everything. Because otherwise, it'll just keep going and then it doesn't fully install. So there's that. But I'll say, you know, Pac-Man is fast.
Yep.
And the packages are current, and from what I could tell in most part, the packages are nearly pure vanilla packages.
Dude, they do not modify these packages at all. These
that
are
actually
just,
has some real nice advantages.
Like if Firefox, there's a new version of Firefox. What do? They just take the latest bits of Firefox and stick it in a package. That's it. You don't get a modified version with a new icon or a new name in Debian like you'd get in Debian.
Right.
It's just the pure from the developer package, which is nice. But they're not really integrated. Like, you're not going to go into Arch and say, you know what, I'm going to get a bunch of packages that are designed to work well together. You're going to get exactly what you want. Now, if you plan it out ahead of time and you say, I want these 6 or 7 packages that I know work well together, well, then you're good to go.
That's
but
true.
You got to know. You got to research it before you stick them on there to know
the
if they're going to work
together.
The
other thing you got to kind of know is because it's sometimes so bleeding edge, if you're doing something really big like system updates, Arch has put together a form, and they also, if it's really a common breakage, they put something on their front page. But if you're going to do a lot of security updates, I'm going to link to a form post that Arch, a subform that Arch keeps of all of the known breakages. Like, they just switched to, like, Python 3 or something like that, and there's some known breakages.
Bane of my existence. Python 3 breaks backwards compatibility with all of Python, basically. So Illumination Software Creator, the Python that it spits out.
Yeah.
I've been getting emails and things.
Oh,
like,
really?
Why doesn't it work with Python 3?
Oh,
well,
no.
Well, because the Python guys decided to break compatibility.
Well, why
don't you upgrade for Python 3? Because the only thing in the world using Python 3 is Arch right now. Nobody else uses Python 3. And nobody's going to use Python 3 for like 20 years.
You think so? I'll tell you, though, the fact that they're vanilla packages has one nice advantage, and that is I have a Ubuntu 10.10 machine that has a bug in the Samba client for mounting Samba shares if you're not root, and that's got to be due to a package or a patch that Ubuntu applied in their package for the Samba client, because I don't have that problem in any other distro with the same versions. So having the vanilla source package is actually sometimes really nice.
It's handy.
And I had a misunderstanding. I thought Pac-Man mostly did compilations, sort of like more like a merge. It is more binary package based with a source option. I would say, though, if you took Pac-Man out of Arch, you've seen apt move over to Fedora, for example.
Yeah.
There's no reason that Pac-Man couldn't be ported to another distribution.
No, none at all.
And also, you know, Pac-Man's freshness is really, really, the repos is very, very fresh. they must be using...
The freshness is the thing.
Yeah, the freshness keeper over there at the Arch repos. But really,
they put a little baking soda in that fridge.
There's probably only a handful of applications that you want to have super, super fresh all the time, like maybe Chromium.
Yep.
Maybe Firefox 4, maybe, Empathy or something like that.
Some little user land apps, yeah.
But with the PPA system on Ubuntu... I already get all of that. I get daily Chromium builds.
True.
I get daily Firefox 4 builds. I get daily lots of things through PPAs. I don't need Pac-Man for that. Now, that being said, I don't think that's what makes Arch Arch. I think it's its culture. I think it's minimal build infrastructure. You know, like, for example,
it's the ideology from the ground up.
Keep it as simple as super possible. Whatever,
right.
KISS or whatever. Keep it simple. Stupid, is that what they call it? The KISS thing.
Yeah,
I hate it when people say that, but
and
that's
not
true.
And again, not simple to use. Simple from the point of view of technology.
Yeah.
Technologically simple, as few moving parts as possible. If you add a cog, you know you're adding the cog. There's no surprise
now,
cog.
Now, why don't
in
you bring
system.
Up the VirtualBox? There we have, because we've got. I went ahead and I installed KDE 4 in that guy, and you were doing a GNOME one, right?
Yeah, and I did a GNOME one. Now, and I did both GNOME and KDE. Now, it was pretty great.
Yeah. This is their vanilla KDE 4, and they've got you know, meta packages, essentially, where you could do KDE 4 minimal or KDE 4 full. I went into KDE 4 full, and then it goes out and gets a different set of packages based on that command.
Yep.
And it, with that power pill, it was so
it worked,
damn fast.
It worked great. I love the resulting system.
Mm-hmm.
The resulting system is only what I want, exactly what I want. It just took longer to
that's
get set
thing.
Up.
That's, and because that's really, we jump around a lot, I'm a little worried about fatigue of setup.
Yes, that's the big thing for me. I love this, though. And I was trying to figure out why I wouldn't just use this all the time.
So check out what I went out and found. I don't know exactly how to pronounce it, but it's Chakra or something. How do you think you want
Chakra.
To Chakra.
Chakra? Chakra?
I don't know.
This sounds foreign to me.
This is what Ubuntu is to Debian for Arch. So this is they take the Arch base, and now they're starting to introduce some incompatibilities, I read, according to my BuzzFeed. But they repackage it up. They throw KDE 4 on there. They throw in a few things like the NVIDIA driver and the Catalyst ATI driver. And then they throw it out as an ISO image with a live disk, and you can download it, and you've got a distro to run Arch that just comes out of the box with KDE 4 and all
that's
that.
That's kind
of handy. Yeah, it's kind of neat. So link in the show notes for that. I haven't tried it myself
yet. I don't know that I'd want that.
You kind of defeat the purpose a little bit.
Yeah, to me, it defeat the purpose. Like, I mean, I'm sure, you know, Arch is a fine base to build a bigger, you know, I don't want to say more robust, but more like all packaged together distro but
and
we've
maybe,
already got that.
Maybe there's a tool out there for Arch we don't know about, but how about if you took, you know, you took a fairly good Arch setup, and then you made a, you know how when Fedora has the spin tools and Ubuntu has the tools where you can turn that into a distro?
Yeah.
If they had something like that for Arch where you could make just yourself distro that you could reload with, because then it would just be as simple as firing up Pac-Man and doing an update. So you could, with a rolling distro, you could have a year old burnt DVD that you'd throw
it on, they run the update, let it sit for 3 hours, and you've got a fully
up-to-date system. And it would just be Brian's distro.
That
and
is
you
handy.
Get well all the base stuff pre-configured.
I mean, that's kind of what I do already.
Could you
it's just
imagine,
not with Arch.
Could you imagine having to set up Arch before X11, before Xorg could do the self-configuration without having to hand do the Xorg compile?
Dude, that would have been a pain.
I was looking at like the steps to do all that.
I'd have done it once.
And I just been like, screw that. I'm so glad. Now, it depends on the video card you have, but in a lot of cases, you can just type start X and X can auto-configure to your video.
Yeah.
And man, that probably
I was using an Intel chipset, so it was a
breeze. I did a virtual machine and an Intel chipset, and both were
no problem.
So is this going to become your daily driver?
No, yeah. No, not at all. I think it's awesome, though.
Yeah,
I think it's great. Honestly, this is what Fedora should be.
Yep,
this is like this is the power user, the developer. This is where people should be going to use to develop that bleeding edge new Linux technology, whether it's GNOME or KDE or the underlying guts of the system.
Totally.
This sort of thing right here is great because you install this, you know that the people installing it are tech savvy. They're going to be able to file good bug reports. They're going to be able to potentially be more likely to lend a hand actually developing it and testing it and documenting it,
and it's just,
as is proven by their amazing documentation.
It also, I think, is a fascinating look at how elegant a non-touched distro can look. I mean, not that it's not that they don't work on it and polish a few things, but in the sense that there is a certain elegance to it just being pure Linux.
Pure Linux. It's it's nothing more than exactly what you need. And the great part about that is it's fast.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you make it slow.
Yeah.
And that's great to me because I know that if it just starts slowing down one day, I'm like, oh man, what did I do?
Yeah.
And it did that a couple of times with me because honestly, I installed a metric crap ton of stuff because I wanted to see if I could from the – okay, we should mention the user repository.
You want to try to break at it.
So the Arch user repository.
Yeah.
So the standard Arch repositories are great. Mm-hmm. They have pretty much everything you're going to want in them. However – the Arch user repository, the AURs, contain everything else packaged by Arch users.
Because the actual official Arch repo is not that huge, but when you combine, when you bolt on the AUR,
you get everything.
Yeah,
it's literally like Patrick Stewart's, like it was too late. I got
everything.
I got all the apps. Yeah, it's too late, and it's fantastic. Heck, you can even go in here. One you know handy dandy person actually took my app and Illumination and put it in AUR.
That's awesome.
So there's an AUR for it now. So people can actually go grab it if they're running Arch, which is great. I like that And of course, you can do that on Fedora. Sure. You can do that. I mean, there's you know, the PPAs, and there's all that stuff for all the distros. But there's something about the simplicity of the way they do it in Arch that makes it special.
Yeah,
it makes it interesting to me.
It's not afraid to be Linux.
Yeah, yeah. And now, am I going to run Arch again? Probably. I'm probably not going to use this as my default machine every day because I earn a living on Linux.
And I need
the machines that most Linux users are using. Mm-hmm. So the reason I'm not going to use Arch is not because, you know, of some technological reason. Honestly,
no.
The machine, once I got everything set up, and it was a little bit of a pain on my laptop, but I got touchscreen working.
Oh, really?
I got my Wi-Fi working. Everything worked. I never tried my SD card reader, but I never used that one.
You know, I was going to say, and I think you kind of started touching on it, the perfect user for Arch, in my opinion, is somebody who's ran Linux for a little while, feels like they're pretty comfortable now, maybe even a little bored, and you don't need to have absolute, compatibility isn't the right way to put this, but for example, if you work in a place where everyone there runs a Debian-based system, it's just a lot more convenient if you also run a Debian-based system.
Yeah, share packages, you create one central repository, everyone connects to it.
If that's not a requirement for you, or they happen to be running Arch, and you want to learn Linux at a really, you know, comfortable level, try out Arch. The documentation alone will help you learn.
And, I mean, it's a great distro. Like, let's say you're in a company that's really worried about security.
Mm.
You only install the few packages you need to get your job done.
And since stuff doesn't run by default, there's not going to be a bunch of services running on this box listening for network connections.
You know there's no crazy old SSH daemon without the security set up properly run in the background because you didn't install it yet.
Right.
So it's not there yet.
Hey,
and even if you did install it, it's not running because you forgot to type it in.
So thumbs up.
I gotta say, yeah, thumbs up. I mean, it's very hard to give this the big gold stamp of everyone should run out and do Arch because you shouldn't.
Yeah, it's not
Arch,
for everyone, for sure.
Arch is like the distro that we should say, you know what? Don't use Arch. As Linux users, you know, someone comes to you, they says, hey, you know, I heard about Arch. Is it cool? You go, you know what? Don't use Arch.
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, really? Is it cool? Well, you know what? You should go read the Wikipedia page, but don't use Arch. And when they come back to you again, you're like, hey, you know what? I'm thinking maybe I will install Arch. I know you said don't, and then you say, hey, stop. Don't use Arch. And they're like, all right. And they come back a week later. I'm like, you know what? But I saw some screenshots, and I saw a YouTube video, and it looked like a cool setup. And they're like, you know what? Read the documentation. Read all 200,000 pages of the documentation. Then you can use Arch.
Or
I think that's...
Have them go grab our torrent file, then it's already set up for them.
Oh, yeah, they could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to give a quick shout out.
But that's not the full experience.
I know it's not.
That's not the point.
But if you want to get in and play with Pac-Man and play with that kind of stuff and learn how to update a system.
Oh, and people are asking in the chat room, you know, how does it compare with Gentoo? And, you know, the few mentions of Linux from scratch have already been made. And I'm going to say this. Linux from scratch is like, is not Arch. Think of Linux from scratch as a way to build Arch. You know, if you're doing Linux from scratch, you get literally nothing. You don't get a kernel. You don't get to install everything. You got to figure out how to partition that crud on your own.
And Gentoo's more from scratch too. You go and you partition the drive from the command line. You format the drive from the command line.
Yep.
You create an environment. You root into that environment. After you copy kernels over there and you know, all this kind of stuff, you get more down to the metal, literally.
It's basically, think of it this way. Linux from scratch or Gentoo, that's great. You use them and you get exactly what you make, exactly what you put into it. Arch kind of sits on top of that. It's like the automated version of that.
Yeah, they provide you a kernel.
You say, you know what, LS tool. Yeah, I want to install my wireless drivers, but instead of having to build them, compile them, recompile your kernel, and do all these sorts of things, install it. You just install the package for it and then set a flag in a config file somewhere. You don't have to go through all the steps. It just is. Think of it like a time saver. It's a time saver of doing everything from scratch.
If I had the luxury of switching distributions at the moment, I think I would switch to Arch for a while just because I felt more at home almost in a way.
Yeah,
Me too. I talked a little bit about PowerPill that made Arch crazy, crazy fast. Well, I wasn't happy at that point with apt, so I went out and found app-fast, and I'm going to put a link to that. And they claim up to 26 times faster installations. I will give you a real-world
example. I like 26 times faster. That's great.
I'm on an old laptop. I type in, I installed. Here's a little thing I do now, by the way. I install Ubuntu 10.10 server, and then apt-get install Ubuntu desktop.
Do you really?
Because then I get the after I do an app get update, I get the totally latest. So that way, after I get everything set up, I don't have to do package updates because it's already the latest package.
I like that.
After because you do an app get update,
you cheated.
You run So here's what I did on Ubuntu server. I did app-get install Ubuntu desktop. Right.
Yeah.
1 day, 52 hours. Holy crap! Right.
Really.
So I go. I'm like, that's crazy. So I go look up. I got to make app faster. App-fast. It's just a shell script. He replaces curl in apt-get with something crazy. I forget what it's called, but it's super fast. And I didn't time it the second time because I got interrupted. But I did the app-fast install Ubuntu desktop. Hit enter. Walked away for about 20 minutes. About, I don't know exactly, might have been 15, came back and it was done.
So not a day.
Not a day, it was done.
So that's faster.
It's fast.
So what you're saying is it's faster.
Yeah, so app-fast. An Axle. That's what it uses instead of curl is Axle.
Love it.
And I'll put a link to that in the show notes.
I've never even heard of Axle.
It's cool too, because if you use Debian or Ubuntu, you just download the shell script and then just run the shell script. You don't have to install anything or anything like that. You just run the shell script and install something.
I love it.
All right, Brian. Well, dude, I think that's our look.
I think that's it. And the crazy thing is, I don't know when we'd ever review Arch again, because...
It's a rolling review.
It's Arch. And at that point in time, I'm like, what are we going to do? Talk about the latest KDE? No, because we'll talk about that elsewhere.
Well, you know, that's one thing I thought about keeping this virtual image around for was when the new KDE comes out, I'll just update to it now.
See, that's what I was thinking, Gnome Shell. I was going to try Gnome Shell on Arch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, because...
It's right there. As soon as it's like released, boom. I got
anything
right
else
there.
To say?
I got nothing else to say, except for don't try Arch, but then try Arch. All right. That brings us unabashedly to the end of this week's show.
Feels good.
I've got one final thing I wanted to throw out there just because I thought it was cool. So somebody in the Linux Action Show put together a little Linux distro over in SUSE Studio.
Oh, I love SUSE Studio.
And put it up on the SUSE Gallery.
Yeah.
And
that's cool.
Well, that little distro is right over here. I don't know if you can zoom in there. Probably not.
No.
But over here, look on the right-hand side, the Illumination Software Creation Station.
You're the featured appliance in the SUSE Gallery.
The featured appliance
that's cool,
of
dude.
The week over at SUSEGallery.com.
You were just talking about this the other week. So this is like you can download this, and this is a distro with Illumination Software Creator already loaded.
Yeah, it's already loaded.
The Creation Station.
And so... I mean, realistically, I did this, you know, if two things. I mean, one, you know, it's great for me to give this out to people and you know, say, hey, try out my app. It's really, really cool and all that sort of thing. And they can try it out without any risk. And they can take it to their school as live CDs just boot it up everywhere. And it's a great way to go for that. But you know, I also wanted to see how easy it was to get from start to finish into the SUSE Gallery with something that was polished, something that was good looking.
And?
It's so damned easy. I mean, I know we've talked about it before. I know we've talked about
I
how
like
nice
the
SUSE
Gallery,
is.
Dude. I like it a lot.
It's great. It's a great setup. So so it's the featured appliance over there, and it's interesting because it's got commercial closed source components in it because it's got Illumination Software Creator in it.
Right.
So you can still like let's say you work at Microsoft and you would like to include a version of Microsoft Office wrapped up in wine. You literally, I mean, you're not going to do that, Microsoft. I know that. Though if you did, that's cool. But you know, you could still do that here through SUSE Studio and SUSE Gallery. So it really helps. I don't know. It's a cool tool for commercial companies. That's the most redundant thing I've ever
said. First of all, there are sites like distrowatch.com and stuff like that, but this is sort of a new way to look at featuring really cool creations.
It's really, really cool.
And the fact that they do allow for that kind of thing does kind of give people, you know, a way to add a certain maybe extra value to a Linux desktop or something. Maybe they can throw a little something.
I dig that. I think that's really, really groovy. I mean, I don't know. You know, looking through SUSE Gallery, there's not like billions of appliances that you can download. But one of the cool things is when they do create it, you get a USB flash image, the CD image.
Yeah, they generate that.
The virtual VMDK for VMware. You just get all of that. And
they generate
that
for you, and that's sweet.
I don't have to do nothing.
You don't even have to download
They host the bandwidth for me.
That's...
I don't have to host nothing. Nothing.
That is nice.
Doesn't matter if it's a 4 gig ISO image.
Maybe we'll just start releasing episodes that way.
Dude, you know what we should do? One complete distro per episode with the video file in it. So just download season 2. It boots up.
You know what we'll do?
You log in with Linux is awesome.
Yeah.
Boom, video starts playing.
You know what I'll do is we'll just take a super minimal Arch install with an Apache server and a Samba server. And so you just download the ISO, you start it up in VirtualBox, and then it starts a Samba share and a web page, and you can go in there
torrent.
And stream it. And torrent it, how it seeds it for you.
Dude, every version, just boom, torrent, torrent, torrent.
I think we can probably fit that in like a 180 megabyte image.
Yeah, just bring your little ISOs, your little
That's so funny.
Just burn CDs, bring them to school. Okay, I'm not actually condoning that.
No.
Though I kind of... No,
otherwise,
no,
you'd
I'm
have
not.
To hide your kids, hide your wife.
You'd have to do all that stuff.
Brian,
anyway,
you don't have to download a whole software creation station to get Illumination Software Creator, though.
You know what? Not going to pitch it anymore today.
Oh.
Because it's awesome. If you want to make apps visually, it's awesome.
I was
it's
just
great.
Saying if you want to go to RadicalBreeze.com.
No, but go over to this screen again.
Oh, okay.
That right there.
Featured.
Here, over here.
Featured.
This right here. You can almost see the mouse move in the video.
Yeah.
Right there.
Featured.
You know, featured.
Yeah.
Featured.
Yeah.
So here's the crazy thing.
What?
I liked these guys before.
Yeah.
Now I think they're the fanciest dudes on the planet.
Now they're the greatest.
So here's just a little pro tip.
Oh, okay.
Fedora. We've had some harsh times.
Oh.
However, I'm just saying, if you were to put my face looking all happy.
There's still room for love.
On fedoraproject.org, along with Fedora Project doesn't like commercial software. Unless it's Illumination Software Creator, go to download it here. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to smile a whole lot more.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying, is I'm easy to buy. This is how you
the
know.
The man has a price.
This is how you know I haven't been bought. Because if I'm still criticizing something, they haven't bought me off yet. So, what I.
Luckily for you, there's a lot of things you can criticize.
Thank heavens.
Yeah.
Thank heavens. No. They haven't bought me off or anything. But the SUSE Gallery stuff is awesome. I think it's really, really cool. I just like pushing it because it pushes other groups to do cool things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, if Ubuntu or Fedora come out with SUSE Gallery and SUSE Studio only better for their distros, I'm going to be like, this SUSE Gallery, poop on that.
We're going to be costing people that. Some bandwidth this
they
episode.
They might have been first and whatnot, but whatever. They're not as cool now. But right now, they're the bee's knees as far as I'm
concerned.
Between the
SUSE Gallery Illumination Software Creator Station image and our torrent of our VirtualBox Arch machine, people are going to be burning through some bandwidth in this episode.
You guys, seriously, just download stuff everywhere. I would like us to murder servers this week.
We're going to
That would be fantastic.
Hey, Brian, anyway, anything else we should cover? I guess we should say you can...
JupiterColony.com, yeah. Forum, Facebook.com/JupiterBroadcasting, Twitter.com/BrianLonduke, Twitter.com/ChrisLAS.
Truth.
Go to Londuke.com and log into my BBS and play Trade Wars.
Yeah, and hey...
That has nothing to do with Linux.
No, but it's awesome.
It's awesome.
Yeah. And you've got the RSS feeds, too, if you want to subscribe to the Linux Action Show. Head over to JupiterBroadcasting.com. Right-hand side of the page, drop that thing down, all the various different feeds, and pretty much every format ever created by God exists in that list.
Is there anything else we can talk about?
I think that's everything, dude.
Good, because I am pooped.
All right, everyone. Well, thanks so much for tuning into this week's episode of the Linux Action Show, and we'll see you back here next week.
Okay. My name is Brian. I wear glasses. I'm still swallowing. I'm stalling for time because I don't know what gland it is. Where does spit even come from? Does it make any sense to anybody? Salivary? Yeah, but where is that? It's just, you have little, like, super soakers in the back of your mouth. What? Like, I don't get that. Here we go. Here we go. I got it.
All right, let's do this house.
Dude, this is episode
133.
Season 14, episode 3?
Guess so.
I'll double check. Double check. I don't want to screw this one up, guys.
Man, you know, I was going through the reruns to find the re-release, the one to re-release for last week's episode, and I went through like three or four old videos of us, and they all start with, what episode number is it?
14, episode 3, that's what it is. Today I challenge you, Brian, to provide information of substance on the show. Smartass.
Alright, here we go.
All night long.
All night. All night. Go. This is the end segment in a 3, 2.
All right. That brings us unabashedly to the end of this week's show.
Feels good.
This week on the Linux Action Show, we review Arch Linux and tell you why this 8-year-old...
I have so much spit in my mouth. I made it that far, but I was like, my tongue was fighting the sloshing waves in my mouth.
Yeah. Here we go. I'm going to try this one more time.